So we're going to move to tour stop number two, Mike Warjohn in Port Blakely, and learn a little bit more about their organization's history and management and the goals relative to a stewardship agreement that they completed with ODF in 2020. So, Mike, if you are ready, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Kyle. I'll ask the other Port Blakely folks to show themselves on the screen while we're getting started here. Thank you, Chairman Kelly, and the esteemed members of the board for inviting us, or rather joining us on this virtual tour. I wish we could actually be doing this in the field, and I'm going to ask that you accept our invitation to do this over when we're able to actually do it in person. We'd love to have you out and show you what this looks like in the real world. If we were in the field right now, I would begin by introducing myself and the team and telling you a little bit about the company before we started our stroll. So I'm going to do that now. I'm joined by Lance Christensen, Claudine Reynolds, and Bonnie Glendenning from our U.S. Forestry team. My name is Mike Warjohn. I'm the president of the company here, or the U.S. Forestry Division, I should say. And it's important to make that distinction because we also have a tree farm that we manage on the other side of the world in New Zealand, and they have their own team down there. So you've got the U.S. Forestry team here. I'll tell you a little bit about who we are and what stewardship means to us, because I think that's an important thing for the board to understand as we start this tour. Like many Pacific Northwest timber companies, Port Blakely is family owned. So, but we're a little bit different in that we are five generations now into this journey. So it gives us kind of a unique perspective on the time and space that we occupy. And this shapes our view of stewardship as a core value. In addition to this stewardship agreement that we're here to talk about today, we have two other agreements with the federal government, one HCP and one Safe Harbors Agreement up in Washington. And with this agreement, about half of our U.S. ownership is involved in some sort of conservation agreement that provides additionality in conservation. The HCP, incidentally, in Washington is now in its 25th year. So it was a 50-year agreement when we signed it. I remember that day, and I remember thinking, wow, 50 years is a long time from now, but here we are halfway through. So it's been interesting, and it's sort of further shaped our perspective. But I really want everyone to understand that the employees here at Port Blakely are united in this vision that a forest is a living, breathing system, and it existed a long time before we were here, and it will continue to exist a long time after we're gone. And so, we're fortunate to be stewards, and this is really what stewardship means to us in the short period of time that the forest is in our custody, so to speak. And the family owners, above all, really want us to leave this forest in a better state than we found it, so that the next generation can enjoy it as well, and many generations after that. So how does this affect our strategy? Well, any kind of strategic planning here at Port Blakely involves thinking about what do we want to have in 50 years? You know, imagine the year 2070. And in order to do that kind of planning, you have to also imagine what is the world going to look like in 50 years? And, there's a lot of things that we can't predict, but we do know beyond a shadow of a doubt that in the year 2070, the world is going to be using a heck of a lot more wood than they are right now. And there's a lot of microeconomic and biological factors that sort of are creating that situation. But, the obvious ones are pretty simple. Concrete and steel are finite resources. We can't simply keep mining stuff out of the ground to build our cities and our communities. That is not sustainable. And second of all, processing those materials and turning them into something you can use requires an immense amount of energy. And energy is a finite resource at the moment, especially when we consider fossil fuels and the expense of converting to other forms of energy. That's not sustainable either. And then finally, when you consider the carbon footprint of all of this, it becomes pretty clear that wood is definitely going to be a preferred construction material, but it's also likely going to be a preferred energy source 50 years from now. So we have to we have to really figure out a way to do this in a smart way that benefits both, you know, the people that are willing to take the long-term investment, but also the people that live on this planet. And so we sort of see it as our mission to figure out how to make this work, how to meet the future demand for wood, while also providing for all of the other stakeholders in the forest environment, which we're going to talk a lot more about. But this means, you know, creating habitat for the threatened species, protecting the aquatic systems, which are the origin source for water that supports all life, including us, and providing recreational opportunities for the community. And, you know, I don't know about you, but if there's one thing I've learned over the last year, it is that a walk in a forest does wonders for your mental health. And I think, you know, it's important to us that opportunity is there for people for a long time. So I'll talk a little bit about this particular project. And in doing so, I will now fire up the presentation. I didn't want to dive right into the PowerPoint presentation. But if I can go like this. Can someone give me a verbal yes that they can see what I'm showing?
Yes.
Good. So this particular forest, we felt was particularly important to pursue a stewardship agreement here for a couple of reasons. One is it's in Oregon, and unlike our Washington forest, Oregon does not have as much federal protection for the forest practice law. That is to say, there isn't a programmatic HCP for all forest practices in Oregon, like we have in Washington. But more importantly, there is this idea that this forest lies directly between the Mount Hood National Forest and the Portland sort of metro suburban and Willamette Valley agricultural area. And so it occupies this critical space that we think is so important to preserve. And in doing so, we want to, you know, like I said, provide the community with the opportunity to see and enjoy this forest, but also as sort of the last the last line of defense for all of the aquatic systems and wildlife that might be on that urban interface. So we saw this as a unique opportunity to lock this in with the state of Oregon and give us that regulatory certainty that you need when you're making these decisions 50 years down the road, you know. And so our objectives with the plan, you know, is really to say, if we're willing to commit to do these things, like you've heard about in the other example, we're going to not be penalized for doing so. We know that the field that we're playing on is not going to be re-chalked underneath our feet. And so we definitely want to have that environmental protection. We definitely want to go where the science leads us, and we have in fact done that. The aquatic systems are the, you know, sort of the number one priority these days, and for good reason. And you know, we tend to manage on a longer rotation, and also on a what we call a non-declining sustained yield. So we at Port Blakely never harvest more than the entire timber estate grows in any given year. So we'll have the same amount of volume every year forever. And that's important to the owners to have that steady sort of flow. And then the road systems, of course, are, you know, the biggest single point of failure when it comes to thinking about catastrophic things that can happen in watersheds. We want to make sure that our road systems are up to snuff. And you're going to hear a lot more about that as we go. And of course, it's a 50-year agreement, which, you know, we're pretty comfortable operating in those kinds of timeframes, provided everyone around us is also willing to meet us at 50 years. So, and then finally, there are some forest practice rules that are not covered under the stewardship agreement, which we just obviously will continue to work with ODF on those things. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes into this. And one of the things we really needed to do was engage with all of the other stakeholders that, you know, that would have thoughts about a stewardship agreement on 30,000 acres would be the biggest stewardship agreement and forest stewardship agreement in the system. And so we spent a lot of time reaching out to the community and the regulators and the stakeholders and elected folks to socialize this before we, you know, finalize the agreement. I want to introduce Bonnie Glendenning, who's in charge of environmental education and community and coordinating community outreach here in Oregon. And she's going to talk a little bit about the work that we did with the outreach.
Well, thank you, Mike, and good afternoon, everybody. I'm going to talk a little bit about our collaboration and the outreach that we did while we were creating this plan. So during the 12 months that the stewardship agreement was in development, multiple iterations were reviewed with the Oregon Department of Forestry and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. As each version became more refined, the plan improved. Having input from a diverse group of experts was a really great benefit to the plan and to our team. The varied perspectives that all of the ODF contributors brought to the project were invaluable. And by the end of the negotiation, everyone was happy with the result and was pleased to have collaborated on this landmark science-based voluntary agreement. As the plan took shape, we launched an expansive effort to improve our transparency with non-government stakeholders. In the spirit of collaboration, Port Blakely made proactive relationship building a priority. Our outreach created a platform where organizations and individuals were educated about our stewardship agreement and were given access to open lines of communication with the team who is crafting the plan. We introduced the stewardship agreement to conservation and environmental organizations. Over coffee and in our office, we shared our plans with multiple watershed councils. Our outreach included colleagues from various forestry-related organizations. The team also reached out to Oregon legislators and policymakers whose districts were near our lands. We introduced the stewardship concept to them, and we hosted several of these leaders on educational tours of our forest land. And although we don't have any acreage adjacent to current tribal lands, we understand that the Native Americans were the stewards of these lands long before we were, and that their traditional lifeways still run throughout Clackamas County. We sat down with our maps and talked about the plan with representatives from the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. In all, our outreach efforts engaged more than 100 stakeholders, many of whom we continue to build lasting partnerships with today. In October of 2019, Port Blakely invited stakeholders out to a demonstration site that had been harvested according to the latest stewardship agreement prescriptions. Interested stakeholders were invited to walk the property, see the prescribed practices on the ground, and ask questions one-on-one to our foresters, wildlife biologists, and Port Blakely leadership. Once the Oregon Department of Forestry and Port Blakely had drafted a plan they felt good about, the stewardship agreement was released for public review and comment. The standard public comment period is 21 days, but because this time period included the holidays, the decision was made to extend the comment period beyond 30 days. By January 2020, we had progressed to the public hearing stage. In partnership with the Oregon Department of Forestry, a public hearing was held at the Molalla Fire Department, and anyone who wanted to speak was given time to testify. Afterward, Port Blakely staff was on hand to answer questions individually with neighbors and participants who wanted to know more. The collaborative spirit under which this agreement was developed has had lasting effects. In showing respect for the diverse positions and values of different stakeholders, we formed relationships that continue to grow today. In the time since our meeting with Molalla River Watch, we have participated in several of their events, and they are currently working with us on two Woodcock Creek restoration projects. Our introduction to the Native Fish Society led to a partnership on a critical side channel project along the Molalla River. Port Blakely's log donation helped create a point bar jam, an effort to protect a cool summer refuge for young coho and Chinook salmon. On February 21st, 2020, the Oregon Department of Forestry and Port Blakely entered into the largest forestry stewardship agreement in the history of Oregon. Approximately 30,000 acres of forest land were included in the 50-year agreement, contributing to conservation efforts that benefit wildlife, water, and the next generation of Port Blakely family owners. To give you more insight into our conservation strategy, I'm going to hand it back to Mike now, who will introduce you to Claudine.
Thanks, Bonnie. And I should point out that Bonnie's been with our company for 14 years, and we have a lot of veterans here. And Claudine, who is our Director of Wildlife, Fisheries, and Environmental Policy, is a 13-year veteran of Port Blakely. And she really led the science and led the team that designed this plan and is going to get into a little bit more about the conservation measures and what the stewardship agreement means to us on the ground. And so I will hand it over to Claudine and say, here we go, as soon as I bring this back up again. All right.
Good afternoon, everyone. Again, we wish you were able to, we were able to show you our forest in person today, as was the original intention. But we do hope that you'll be able to make it out with us in the future sometime. Our stewardship agreement was created to function at a landscape scale to develop a habitat condition that is diverse, high functioning, and resilient. We acquired the majority of our Malala forest in 1987. The landscape was primarily young, second growth plantation forests. The forests are located in the foothills of the Cascade Mountains within the Clackamas and Malala River watersheds. Approximately 188 miles of streams flow through them, with more than half initiating as headwater non-fish streams. In 2002, we went through the process to certify our forests as sustainable, and we have maintained that certification ever since. Over the last three decades, since we acquired the land, we have voluntarily and patiently cultured and grown this forest, and the mature landscape that we now have makes the stewardship agreement a good fit for us. The plan was designed to create a landscape scale habitat mosaic and to maintain or increase the diversity of aquatic and terrestrial habitats that exist throughout our forests. This is accomplished in part by making management decisions at the local or harvest unit scale. We have prescriptions for middle-age stands, including pre-commercial thin and commercial thin management, which increase the habitat contribution in these forest types. But due to time, the focus in this presentation is on the prescriptions that we apply at the time of regeneration harvest. In advance of harvest operations, we go to each site to identify and map all aquatic habitats and any unique or ecologically sensitive habitats. Once we know what resources we have at a site, we apply protective and restorative measures to maintain high-functioning habitat that is capable of providing the habitat requirements for native and aquatic terrestrial species. I'll provide a few examples. Starting with riparian buffers. Streams are classified based on their size, if they are fish-bearing, and if they have year-round flow. Riparian buffer widths are based on these classifications. We conduct surveys on each stream to determine the uppermost point of fish distribution. Under the plan, all native anadromous and resident fish are treated the same. Once we know which streams are fish-bearing and which are not, we conduct an additional survey on the non-fish portion of the streams to verify which ones flow year-round and which ones go dry in the summer. To protect the riparian function of these streams based on the stream classification, we adopted two management schemes. For non-fish streams that flow year-round, we retain managed buffers, whereas the trees closest to the stream are all retained, and a portion of the trees towards the outside of the buffer are able to be removed. This is seen in the photo on the left. For fish-bearing streams, we retain unmanaged riparian buffers of various widths depending on the stream size. An example of that can be seen in the photo on the right. This video shows some different views of riparian buffers. The first one is a non-fish perennial buffer. You can see the no-touch inner portion and the managed outer portion. On non-fish perennial streams, the flow determinations are made during the driest time of year, and then the entire length of the stream that has year-round flow is protected at the time of harvest. Next, we move into the interior of a buffer that is along a fish-bearing stream. You can see the integrity of the understory vegetation and how diverse it is. You can imagine the quality of the shade in these areas. These areas provide biological corridors and connectivity and function as hotspots for native wildlife. They also function to protect water quality throughout the watershed. Woody debris performs important function when it falls into streams, including contributing to the development of complex fish habitat. Many streams are deficient in large wood as a result of past land uses and practices. As a restorative effort, we actively place large wood into small and medium fish-bearing streams to increase in-stream habitat function. Our plan also includes a significant terrestrial component. As a protective effort, upland habitat patches are retained around ecologically sensitive or unique habitats where they occur. This is to maintain habitat diversity and connectivity across the landscape. The habitat patches maintain the structural integrity of the terrestrial environment, including understory vegetation and woody debris. These have been shown to provide functional habitat for upland species. This video shows the local to landscape perspective of an upland habitat patch. This patch is surrounding a small forested wetland. As we move from the ground view up to the sky view, you can see how the habitat patch fits into and contributes to the landscape scale habitat mosaic. Snags provide critical habitat to more than 50 wildlife species in Oregon forests. They are important habitat features to maintain across the landscape. At the time of harvest, safe snags are retained and additional snags are created to ensure that these features are maintained. As part of the plan, we retain terrestrial woody debris of all shapes and sizes. Woody debris provides important function for soil development and habitat for forest floor wildlife. It also helps to retain moisture and contribute nutrients to the newly planted forest. As part of this, we create biodens in an effort to provide larger structures that could be used for denning species and to attempt to make up for larger woody structures that have been lost over time. You can see an example of all of these in this video. As a side note here, all of our forests are reforested within 2 years of being harvested. The construction and maintenance of our road infrastructure is an important part of our plan. The road system is critical for ensuring flexibility to operate without causing environmental harm. A few of our road prescriptions include ensuring fish passage for all native fish species, even headwater resident species, installing larger culverts to pass water and debris associated with 100-year rain events, and developing construction plans and maintenance schedules that proactively protect water quality. These are just a few of the prescriptions that make up our overall conservation strategy and conclude the virtual tour of how some of them look on the landscape. Next, to learn about how it is going to implement the plan.
Thank you, Claudine. Sorry for the clunky video. I'm running the video. That's not Claudine's fault. So, next up is Lance Christensen, who's our area manager for the Oregon Tree Farm. Lance is a 31 going on 32 year veteran of the company. And, you know, somebody has to make this stuff work on the ground. So when we're drawing up a plan, we really lean on our operations team to find out what is actually possible when you're thinking about a 50 year plan. And what you don't want is the people 50 years down the road to be cursing you for putting together something that's completely unworkable. So Lance was instrumental in making sure what we're doing on the ground is possible and will continue to be possible And he's going to talk a little bit about what this means operationally for our company. And Lance, I'll cue the presentation back up again for you here.
Great. Thanks, Mike. And good afternoon, everybody. Since the stewardship agreement prescriptions stay consistent and predictable for us, Port Blakely can continue to look for long-term investments in forestry, and it improves our long-term on-the-ground planning abilities. Next slide. Thank you, Mike. I think it was mentioned earlier, but all of our streams within the ownership have been identified and classified. We can apply the appropriate prescriptions to these streams then as we do our future management activities, such as commercial thinning, regeneration, harvest, and our road maintenance and management plans. When doing a notification process, the agreement is the written plan. This allows for a single notification when preparing for our annual regeneration harvest activities. Normally, when someone submits a notification and they will be active near a protected resource, a written plan will also be submitted. That written plan describes how the operation will protect the resource in greater detail. Individual notifications and written plans for road construction and our in-stream culvert work are still going to be necessary, since we need to submit more detailed engineer plans when doing those type of activities. Something that's really been beneficial for us and ODF, the ODF stewardship foresters, their field visits are more efficient when reviewing and approving riparian prescriptions for regeneration harvest units. Current forest practice rules allow for the removal of trees from the buffers. To do this, the landowner or the operator needs to determine the amount of basal area in a buffer, and then if there is extra, some of the trees can be removed. The stewardship foresters need to go in and verify that the calculations are correct, and then agree that basal area can be removed, that trees can be removed. Port Blakely's prescriptions for fish streams is a no harvest buffer. The stewardship forester only needs to check the buffer width when reviewing those notifications. The time that is saved in the notification process gives stewardship foresters more time to perform oversight and work with us on our active operations. So, can you back up one, Mike? Thank you. With this slide, our easily identified buffers allow the loggers to know which trees to protect and which trees to protect and which ones to leave when harvesting near a marked riparian or upland leave area. In marking these areas, we use flagging, paint, and tags, just like the one you see here. Port Blakely's best management practices for roads are a part of the stewardship agreement. This shows our commitment to the reliable road system for protection of water and also the effective timber transportation and removal of our logs. Port Blakely foresters have a great working relationship with ODF. So the implementation of this stewardship has been going very well. And we appreciate the hard work they have put into getting this plan up and rolling. Back to you, Mike. Thank you very much.
Now I'm on mute. Who hasn't done that? Thank you, Lance. I wish, again, like I said, I wish we could all be out there so you could see the amount of just really good work that has gone into this. I think there's three things that I'd really like the board to take away. One is that all of these plans are very complex. It really doesn't matter the size, but when you're doing one on 30,000 acres, there's a lot of work that goes into it. And it takes time, it takes teamwork, it takes a lot of thoughtfulness. Second, the plan has to be site specific. There's no way we could just take this stewardship agreement and apply it across the whole state of Oregon. It's very specific to this tree farm, the forest type that's there, and you know, the drainages and the aquatic systems and so forth, very carefully designed for the specific forest. And the third thing is that it couldn't happen without a lot of collaboration, especially with and by the Oregon Department of Forestry. Nate and his team were fantastic as we went through this. We had a lot of back and forth. They challenged us on a lot of things, helped us to sort of rethink our strategy in some areas. And, you know, we are really grateful for that collaborative effort. So, you know, I know we're running up against the clock here. So I want to, I think at this point, say thank you and turn it over for questions. Whoever's monitoring the questions, is that you, Kyle?
Yeah, it looks like we've got some. Thank you, Mike.
Sure.
Yes, thank you. Twofold question. One, I'm interested in how many total acres we have in these stewardship agreements like this. And second, you've got acreage in New Zealand. And would you give us your perspective at a very high level, a couple sentences on the competitiveness in New Zealand versus the Northwest, and maybe specifically on how we might compare on genetics and, you know, soil restoration and health?
Yeah, I can't answer the first question. I don't know the total number of stewardship agreements, so I'll defer that to ODF. But I can tell you that New Zealand's government made a very strategic and focused decision in the 1980s to invest in the forest industry in New Zealand. And so there were a lot of sheep farms that were going bankrupt. They were subsidizing, and they needed to flip that primary industry into a different primary industry, being forestry. So there's been a ton of investment in research and genetics and so on and so on. The difference really is, of course, that in New Zealand, everything's an introduced species. So we're growing Douglas fir and radiata pine, which are non-native, on a much faster rotation than we do here, which has a whole bunch of benefits and a whole bunch of challenges. And I could talk about New Zealand for hours, actually. But really, I'd say that we're comparable as it pertains to genetics and things like assisted migration and all of these topics that are so important to us in the world as we deal with climate change. But we share a lot of data with them. We share a lot of research techniques and a lot of people. Frankly, we've got Kiwis working up here, and we've got people that have from our team that have worked down there, and there's a lot of tech transfer. So it's a very pro forestry environment in New Zealand because they need that for the economy.
Carla, your question about the number of acres and stewardship agreements, I think Nate is actively working on that. The 30,000 acres for Port Blakely was certainly the largest one. Most of the other ones are probably in the, you know, 200 to 500, 700 acre range. Looks like Nate's got some more details there.
I wish I was able to produce those off the cuff. I was scrambling. I guess what I would say is all the ones that we've had up until this point have all been kind of in that family forest landowner category. So, I mean, the Bauman Tree Farm at 600 and some acres was pretty large. So most of them are in kind of that 200 acres. So,
in how many?
A dozen in that category. And then so Port Blakely would be the 13th. So their 30,000 acre one is multiples of all of what we've had enrolled to date.
And we can get you the specific number after.
Yeah.
The other thing I'd add there too is that for some of our landowners that are under certification programs, we've got about 4.7 million acres under different certification programs. 3.8 million of those are under SFI, Sustainable Forestry Initiative, with about 900,000 either under American Tree Farm System or forest sustainability FSD. It looks like Joe has a question as well.
Yeah, thanks, Kyle. Mike, I really appreciate the presentation. Enjoyed that and the work that Port Blakely is doing. Thanks. That was great. I did have a question about you. You mentioned how a stewardship agreement gets into the specifics, how you develop that agreement related to this tree farm that you're this 30,000 acres. And you talked a lot about riparian areas and such. I just wondered if you could maybe paint a little more color on that. How did you come up with those riparian area protections? What kind of drove you to those decisions? I'm just curious. There's a little more color you can put on that related to riparian areas.
Yeah, sure. Good question. Well, I'll take a first stab at this, and then I'm going to have Claudine add some color, if that's all right. The interesting thing is that this was a pretty mature forest landscape when we started, and there are parts of the tree farm that are, significant parts of a given drainage. So if it was a 40-acre piece and a 40-acre piece and a 40-acre piece, you'd have a different strategy than if you're managing the whole watershed. And so I think we, in some respects, the maturity of the forest and the fact that it's sort of contiguous, changes your approach versus a scattered block or if you're starting with, starting with a field or with repod or whatever. So those are two examples. There's many others. I don't know, Claudine, if you want to add any other thoughts on that.
I'll just add that the majority of our streams are in the headwaters. And so we really wanted to design a strategy that would be most effective for the part of the watershed that we had the most stewardship value over. And so it was, that's why we had to collect some data to understand those streams better ourselves. And that included some analysis on how much of them flow year round versus how many of them go seasonal. What was the prevalence of wetlands and seeps and other aquatic features? So we could really understand what resources we were starting with in order to develop a plan that would be meaningful for that landscape. So we consulted with a lot of experts in this space as well to be sure we were considering what local ODF&W was a partner in developing this strategy as well. Talking to folks that knew more about certain aquatic distributions than as partners with us on this. We also looked at the soils and the steepness of the slopes as part of our strategy. So there were multiple elements that went into it, all that were specific to the landscape that we're working on.
Thank you.
I've got a question. I wanted to drill down just a little bit about the calculations you made of why you did this. And so in trying to better understand, were there assumptions made that during this time period, it was likely that there would be changes in the Forest Practices Act, or what were the kind of thinking that went into overall this decision to move ahead with this? And secondarily, could you tell us a little bit more in detail in terms of the longer rotations, exactly what that means, what it would have been and what it's going to be?
Yeah, sure. So the thing about the Oregon tree farm is that it's not a large percentage of our overall ownership in the United States, but it did have, as I mentioned, a significant portion of the mature timber. So for the next 20 years or so, we're looking at, a big part of our revenue stream is this Oregon tree farm. And if we're going to manage on this non-declining sustained yield, we have to have, some assurance that, by foregoing harvest that we could do today and postponing it 20 years down the road, that it's still going to be there. And so that's a risk calculation that I think any business, will take or make in their strategic planning. So the forest has a lot of value to us. I don't know that we had any particular specific thoughts about forest practices in Oregon. We just have been in Washington a long time and seen sort of the evolution of things there. And we expect that that they will continue to evolve here too. So as far as rotation goes, rotation in our mind is with this non-declining sustained yield, you sort of get this biological efficiency that happens if you have a percentage of the forest in mature timber at all time. And by default, that means some of that's going to be older than economic minimum rotation. And so that also comes with some other habitat benefits and so forth. This isn't really a rotation age plan. We have some other plans that are in fact specifically designed to produce, young forest marginal or other habitat types that require some older trees. In this case, our primary focus here is the fish and the watershed and the riparian areas. So rotation age is not a component of the plan, but it's sort of there by default.
Chandra.
Hi, thank you for the presentation. That was very interesting. And I'm curious, I understand one of the benefits is regulatory certainty over a long time frame. And I wonder, does that mean that there's all of the prescriptions are completely static, or is there any level of adaptive management incorporated into the plan?
Claudine, do you want to answer that?
Yes, we have some adaptive management built into the plan, but there is some monitoring going on as part of it to learn about how do these biodens actually function, how are our snags, our created snags functioning differently than our naturally generated snags. So there is some monitoring going on that if we learn how to be more effective or efficient with our goals, then we can adapt to apply those prescriptions in more meaningful ways.
Yeah, the good news is we have a lot of data with our existing plans to sort of understand how these forest systems evolve and how well these different things work or don't work. In the case, we have things we promised to do 25 years ago and plans that we just have not, been able to make it work as much as we thought we could. So, we've learned a lot of lessons over the years. And I think on this one, we really have just handpicked the things that we know work every time and put them in place. We're also simultaneously applying for our federal habitat conservation plan using this plan. So we'll have the federal assurances alongside with the state as we hopefully when we get through the process.
Sure.
Thank you for that. And just that reminded me of one other question. So you're simultaneously seeking ESA coverage, and I'm just wondering, did you also have conversations with DEQ? Was this intended to also be sufficient to meet our quality standards as well? Were they part of the planning team?
They were not part of the planning team, but we do have some site-specific monitoring, like water temperature monitoring, for example, that's happening in some of the watersheds where we do have significant ownership. And that data will be collected, on an ongoing basis and help inform anything that comes along related to, public health, water quality, or so forth. I mean, those are obviously outside the jurisdiction of ODF, but we do acknowledge that that's an important part of the resource, and we want to meet those needs where they need to be met.
And Nate, in your presentation, I saw a bullet that talked about the ability to update stewardship agreements and revise them. Would you want to, in terms of the question of if things change?
Right. So there is that latitude or that ability. We have, by rule, periodic monitoring that goes along with it. So specific to Port Blakely and the near entirety of the rule book that the agreement spoke to, we elected to have a 1 year kind of more hands-on approach, and then the ability to check in and then recognize other science and stuff along the way, so we weren't held to that. I might take quick second to add that a unique thing about the program, and I think the agreement with Port Blakely illustrates it very well, is to look at forest management from a property-wide perspective. And so in many cases, the Forest Practices Act is very operation by operation focused. And so, you know, a term that we use a lot is the net conservation benefit. And it came up a lot when we were looking at their strategy and the benefit to the resource and, you know, at that scale. And then I quick go back to the acres, just a little under 3,500, including all the non-industrial owners are currently active. Plus, well, so non-industrial and then industrial. Yeah.
Great. Thanks, Nate. Brenda, you had your hand raised.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Kyle. I was just going to follow up on Chandra's question. Are any of the streams on the property draining into 303D listed streams, impaired waters that have a TMDL on them?
Claudine?
There were some reaches of streams that did meet that classification. So we did do that analysis to determine that. I would have to pull up the maps to remember exactly where those are, but there were a couple of reaches that met that designation.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that. I'm just wondering, how the stewardship agreement addresses the contribution to the TMDL.
Mike, do you want me to continue?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, great. Yep.
Okay. So we did not include a TMDL as part of this, but what we did was we designed our prescriptions to be function-based in a way that we would attempt to prevent and mitigate any potential impacts to that. So our streams, that's why we have buffers up for their entire length of perennial flow and a road management plan that prevents any additional impacts that would come off our forest lands.
Yeah.
Thank you. I realize it's site-specific under the Forest Practices Act. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is a good example. That's a great question, because we have this Washington HCP where we have been monitoring, you know, all of these things for years and studying where we think, you know, where we think the buffer widths, you know, are appropriate to help mitigate those types of things. I have personally have comfort in knowing that the harvest pressure on this tree farm is not going to be such that, I guess what I'm trying to say is it's very unlikely that any complete length of stream is going to have harvest activity on it at any one time, because we, you know, we have the sort of the light touch of the harvest plan. So, you know, while the buffer and the harvest unit is important, it's also important to remember that upstream of that and downstream of that is a forest. And it's, you know, so a lot of those types of things will be mitigated just by those prescriptions, as Claudine describes. But, you know, it's something that we completely understand the importance. So, you know, it's definitely, it's in the strategy if it's not on the paper.
Thank you both.
Any other questions? Ben, go ahead.
I was just curious to you guys, are there other companies pursuing these right now?
There was interest, I think, shortly after Port Blakely went through their process, but I haven't seen any specific continuation of that at this point.
I would expect that the industrial timber companies that are involved in the MOU process right now are going to, you know, I can't speak for them, but, you know, it's probably smart to wait and see how that shakes out, you know, before you commit to another 50-year agreement.
Yeah.
I would just like to make a comment. It was interesting. I had worked on stewardship agreements right way back at the start of the Healthy Forest Reserve program, and they were relatively small, like 12-page documents. And there was a management plan, the NRCS plan, and this was more of a wraparound tool. And so when I asked to see the Port Blakely stewardship agreement, you know, I was a little surprised. It really is a rewrite of the Oregon Forest, primarily a rewrite of the Oregon Forest Practice Act, specifically for Port Blakely. And it was extremely impressive to see. I just want to concur the level of work on ODF and Port Blakely side. I was able to tour. They did a tour which included the Fish and Wildlife Service at one back in the day with, I don't think NOAA was able to come, but a very great. So if that opportunity comes again and you're interested, we would love to work with Port Blakely because it was a very informative tour and on the ground does so much better, although the videos were great. So just really impressive work on between ODF and Port Blakely.
Yeah, I'll insist on invite everybody joining us in the field at some point.
Okay, any other thoughts or questions? Chandra.
I promise this is the last one, but just kind of a wrap up, because this is the first large scale stewardship agreement that's been completed. I'm just curious from the perspective of Port Blakely folk and from ODF folk, you know, what were the challenges? You know, looking back, could something have been done better? Are there tweaks that need to be made to make this process smoother or could have gotten to an outcome that, you know, I don't know, was better? Or are we all pleased with where it landed? You know, just kind of the recap for future efforts. Is there any lessons learned there?
Yeah, Mike, do you want to go first?
I think I'll ask the team here if anybody has any thoughts. I have some ideas on that, but Lance, Claudine, Bonnie, anybody have ideas on that?
Well, I can jump in. Mike and I presented our introduction and education to CCFFA, Clackamas County Farm Forestry Association, and there were about 70 to 80 people in the room, a lot of small woodland owners who were very, very interested in what we were doing and how we were doing it. And I think to them, it might be more of a capacity issue, having the time and the expertise to be able to pull off something like this.
Go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I stuck my foot in my mouth in that meeting because I mentioned that the year Port Blakely was founded and that we've been here longer than this was a state. And I forgot I was standing in Oregon and not Washington. And I think some of the people in the room were alive when Oregon became a state and they came after me. But you always lay awake at night wondering if you've forgotten to include somebody, frankly, when you're working on these things. So there's so many stakeholders that are involved that have a thought about it. And so, you know, the public comment period is what it is, but all the outreach that Bonnie put together, it's so important on an agreement this size. And we genuinely wanted to know what the public thought, what the regulators thought. And so I'm not advocating for longer public comment periods, but I do think that strategy is critical to the success of something this size. Just because there are, every time you talk to somebody, you think about it in a different way. So that was really, really valuable.
Couple of things from the ODF perspective that offer, I guess, first to echo all the outreach from a process standpoint, basically just followed the rulemaking process as far as what, you know, the department's role was and our requirements there. But the heavy lift by Port Blakely to do all that additional messaging and outreach on their side, it made the whole thing much cleaner, easier, and more transparent too for everybody. And then also just the other thing I'd mentioned would be, as far as what we could might do differently is looking at the scope of the agreement, and the authority of the department is really within the Forest Practices Act. And so beginning with that as the end in mind, maybe as far as taking Port Blakely's strategy and some of their goals and the crosswalking exercise, I think Bonnie's slide with all the sticky notes really spoke to that for me, but that was a challenge to try to figure out, like, you know, simple things like terms and that sort of thing.
We certainly didn't predict that one third of the forest would burn to the ground on Labor Day last year. So that's another thing that, you know, in the whole journey towards the HCP, that's another thing we've got to deal with. But I feel really, really happy with the result and of the stewardship agreement. And I know we really really tested the mettle of Nate and his team, because it was a lot to process in the regulated amount of time, but they did a great job. So
I think one other thing from our perspective that we learned, certainly with the magnitude of this agreement, is what documents are shared with the public and when. And the I think it's the management plan. Port Blakely also, they offered that up for the public to view, even though the agency didn't have that ability to share it. So that's something that we learned in terms of public transparency and process that will be important, especially if we get some of these in terms of magnitude, you know, what Port Blakely accomplished.
I just wanted to ask how you did come out with the fires, knowing that you were really close to the Malalak Canby situation. But also, you know, I'm sitting here wondering, you're a larger, sophisticated organization with lots of capacity. You've got harvest in other locations. Is there enough assurance built into this program for that smaller operator to replicate this? Do you feel like there's enough assurance built in?
I do. I mean, in as much as ODF has, you know, on the board, and you as the board have the ability to you know, adapt and change and adjust the rules, this definitely, if someone's willing to put it out there and say, we're going to go above and beyond, and in doing so, we, you know, if we're protecting this direction and you decide protection needs to happen that direction, now we're protecting both ways. That's, you know, that becomes a cost. So if I had a 100-acre tree farm, I would consider this just because I wanted to know that the plan that I've got in place right now is going to be the one that I'm going to be dealing with, provided everybody agrees it's the right thing to do. So I think the answer to that is yes.
I've got one more question. You know, besides the obvious of what you're doing in riparian areas and all, if this had not worked out, if you did not have this agreement now, can you tell us what you would be doing differently?
Well, that's hypothetically, you know, we are, at the end of the day, we are a business. And if we were worried about the risk of regulatory take in Oregon, we would have to think about an investment in Oregon, whether or not that makes sense. So we're here now, we want to do the right thing. Fortunately, all of the stakeholders involved agreed with what we believe to be the right thing. And so now we know we can be here for the next century or half a century anyway, but you know, tree farms are bought and sold all the time to mitigate risk. And frankly, Washington has a pretty secure environment, regulatory environment right now, which does affect investment decisions. So, you know, I don't know what we would do, but we wouldn't feel as good about being here as we do right now. That's for sure.
Thank you.
Could I just follow up on that, Jim?
Sure.
Mike, thank you for that. Based upon several comments you've made, it almost sounds like there's some things we should be learning from Washington. You care to comment on that?
Well, only in that I think that, you know, the fact that there's an HCP on the forest and fish law is very reassuring for us, you know, as timberland owners. That's something that means a lot to us. So, you know, that gives you that security you need. Now, if you get in the timber business, you're rolling the dice on you know, 50 years down the road with climate change and regulations and all the other things that happen in markets and who knows what else. But it is nice to know that there's agreement at the state and federal level on what needs to happen on the ground in Washington. So
yeah,
that for me, that's reassuring.
Great. Thank you very much.
Any other questions? This has been great. This has really been really good discussion. Okay, thank you, Mike, Bonnie, Claudine, and Lance for the presentation, the virtual tour. We have some time built in for a break, so I'll leave it.
I believe we are about 3 or 4 minutes ahead of schedule. Beautiful. So let's reconvene at 3 o'clock. We've got a little over 15 minutes. Thank you all.